please talk to me. Let's see if I can hear you.
Jeez, my day was busy. You know, I had works being done at home. You always take that little time, free time to, you know, do some home improvements. So, yeah, so I spent the most of the day. And obviously, you know, getting my son to sort out his PlayStation 4. He got a new game, Sonic, so he's over the moon. He's been playing it the whole day.
What a good dad.
I tried.
Excellent. Now, speaking of being a good dad, what's been good to us in the markets recently?
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think on the softer side, yeah. So, you know, the other day.
Wait. Yes. Speaking of being a good person.
Yes.
I saw you throwing shade on a particular business website in Zambia.
I kind of did because, you know, for the life of me, and it was all on the back of one of the stories that we broke on the website this week on CEC. And I was like, okay, what's the other dude doing about this? And, you know, boom, I couldn't get access to the website. I used my mobile phone. I used my laptop. There was nothing.
So the competition had nothing to say. And you're like, you know what?
Exactly. Yeah, I can do this. Because normally I'll take a couple of days to just assimilate and get as much information. But I said, no, look, I'll run with it. And yeah, threw a bit of shade. Actually sent a message to the founder on the other side.
Really?
Well, he wasn't too pleased
about
that.
You were so mean.
Yeah, I am.
So mean.
But I enjoyed it. I mean, look, it was straight out of the Richard Branson playbook. I mean, he did it to BT when he was launching Virgin Mobile, when they were raiding the London Bridge, and you know, like, quote unquote, I hope no kids are listening. He was like, you know, they had a hot air balloon that just went past when they were failing to raise the London Bridge,
the bridge.
So, and yeah, and the hot air balloon passes by and it's saying, you know, BT can't get it up.
Oh no.
But okay. it got him like the right sort of attention.
Yeah, I mean, he's been one for attention. In fact, if you're still here for international news, he's recently pulled out of the Saudi Arabia man's investment conference, and he threw shade on that as well.
Wow.
And it's like, yeah, when you got Richard Branson throwing shade on what you're doing,
yeah, then you know.
Then you know, yeah. But anyway, let's keep it local for now.
Absolutely.
So, what do you have for us, Moira?
Right. Okay. So, for this week, a bit of a throwback, seeing as it's a Thursday, there's a story that we covered on BAT. Now, as you all know, British America Tobacco, you know, it's an international company. They've got offices in Lusaka and factories. Now, just to rewind the clock a bit, before the year before last, so this is 2016, sales taxes were actually increased on finished products and specifically cigarette products. Okay. Now, what that did was that BAT actually experienced a bit of a beating on the top line. Mm. This is on their revenue. Their revenue really, really plummeted because of the taxes. But then, when we looked at the annual reports for the last 3 years, what we'd observed was that one of the main complaints that they had, in each subsequent financial year, was that they were complaining about illicit cigarettes in addition to the sales tax. But then again, and, you know, when we did a bit of investigative journalism, we actually found that in addition to illicit cigarettes, one of their main competitors, Imperial, were saying that, no, look, we've actually been, competing with them quite favorably. So, you know, the market is pretty much being shared by them. Mm. But then, you know, management team in the early part of last year looked like they were about to, you know, either throw in the towel, because obviously the excessive tax on their cigarettes was beginning to, you know, affect their bottom line. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to current times. Mm-hmm. Management team decides, okay, you know what? If you can't beat them, join them. Mm-hmm. So they opened up a plus 60 million kwacha. No, sorry, $60 million plant in our local M-phase.
Yeah.
And essentially, you know, as everybody knows, that, you know, companies that will build and manufacture locally will actually get incentives from government. So that was a very good move. I mean, I'll clap to, you know, to the management team for that. And currently,
it was a bold move. Did they have that money lying around? Did you know?
Well,
what
you know,
that was?
You know, yeah. the nice thing about group of companies is that they can always run to Big Brother. Mm. So, you know, so money is always
So that was always an option. Why do you think they took so long to do it? There was no need previously.
You know, I honestly think that they didn't anticipate the fallout with the competition that was there locally,
because their
move was actually mimicked by Imperial Cigarettes' move as well to also open up a factory in the same area. But they spent something to the tune of $75 million on their plant. So there's a lot of money that's going on in our own Lusaka M phase.
Yeah.
Now fast forward now to current times when their half year results actually came up. Board chair, Michael Mundashi, was seen smiling because, you know, for the first time in quite a while, they actually posted very, very positive results. Now, this is obviously on the back of the decision to manufacture locally.
You're telling me tobacco companies have been suffering.
They have been
BAT has been suffering.
They have been suffering.
I find that so hard to believe.
I know what you mean. But it's just that the excessive tax on cigarettes is what really hit them. But that's because they imported finished products.
That's because they're importing finished.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to remember, government also played its part in insisting that, no, look, there are incentives if you value add. And wherever you have value additions, it means new jobs are actually created. So kudos to the management team for taking that decision.
Quite a move, yeah.
Yeah.
And that affected you called it top. Wait, exactly. What is between a top and a bottom line?
Okay. So 101 on business business lingo. Uh-huh. So top line is your revenue. Bottom line is your is the profit. Okay. Yeah, okay. The profit. Okay. Yeah. So right, sure, so essentially, sure, sure. You know, when we looked at when we analyzed the unaudited results for half year 2018, it showed that there was a 9% drop in revenue from the previous year. But then you remember, because they now started manufacturing locally, the operating profit actually improved by 1,063%.
That's a big one.
It is a big one. So, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, from going from a year in 2017 where they had a negative earnings per share, which was obviously like a negative profit, they actually went into positive territory this year. And, you know, with the mantra of made in Zambia, I would say that profit was literally made in Zambia.
Yeah. Bonuses all around, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So, anyway, it's clear that, you know, on the operation side, in as much as there was a bit of a dip by 9%, they actually saw, you know, the expenses around their operating activities reduced by 43%. So that begins to show that, you know, that they are now, you know, managing their costs quite
prudently.
And this
is half year.
Exactly. And this is half year. Okay. So, you know, our prediction is that, you know, chances are that, you know, shareholders must be bracing themselves for a good end of the year.
Well, very good for British American Tobacco then, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is weird because I do have my ear to the street on these things. And I know that their products the price has dropped since they've started manufacturing locally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's all because of the trickle-down effects of actually making things locally. Because if you're now not attracting that excessive tax that's applied when you import finished products, you're making them local, value-adding, you know, the benefits can be felt all around. Okay. Though, you know, note to everybody, you know, smoking cigarettes is not good for your health.
It's on the packet.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's on the packet. Excellent.
Yep.
All right. So, do you want to take a little break? You got another one for us, right?
Yes, I've got another one, so we can take a break.
Yes, it is 1:45, so fine. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in literally a minute, guys, so stay tuned again. If you want to participate in our convo, if you have any comments on anything said here, you can actually call in, like I said, 0211-252-227. You can send me a message, 0967-144-220. That's good for text and WhatsApp, 0967-144-220. Or you can get in touch with us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, both are Money FM Zambia, or use the hashtag Money Night Show. We'll be back shortly.
For business on the go, visit www.moneyfmzambia.com to watch, stream, and download various programs from anywhere in the world.
We are back. I'm here in the studio with Mwela Chebesakunda from Financial Insights Zambia. This is our segment we call Outside In. And remember, my topic today is all about the stock market, your experiences with the stock market. Tell me what you know about the stock market. What have you experienced this whole time? Remember, I asked the question, does anybody know when the first stock market ever... Actually, here's a quiz for you. When was our stock market open?
Wow, we've been trading since the 90s, Chi.
Yes, you're right about that.
Yes.
1993.
And trading actually started before that because, you know, Farmer's House was famous for trading farming implements.
Oh, really?
Yeah, farming inputs and stuff, in the 80s, yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
What is your next company for us today?
Okay, so for my next company, it's CEC. This is company obviously based on the Copper Belt. They're an electricity company. Now, some interesting things have been happening at this listed company. First of all, let's rewind the clock. We published a story about new board members being appointed at CEC. Now, this was on the back of the failed transaction where CEC was supposed to be bought by CDC. Now, when those appointments were actually made, and this was actually one of the highest read stories in that particular month when we published it, we'd actually noticed that there were some appointments on the board. For starters, there was the exit of long-serving chairman Mr. Hanson Sindoye, who retired from the board of directors, and then there was an appointment of two new directors. Now, the curious thing about the two new directors was that it was their background. So when we did a background check on these on the two guys, for starters, the first one was Mr. Derek Chime, who comes from the private equity background. He was private equity Africa director at Standard Chartered Bank, and he was seen to bring emerging market experience, which we believe that now fed into what part of the strategy for CEC was actually going to be. The other appointment was a gentleman called Mr. Thomas Featherby, who is currently the chief investment officer at Rondine Capital, and Rondine is basically an investment firm which focuses on listed companies in sub-Saharan Africa and is a long-term shareholder of CEC. So now, looking at the composition, and I'd mentioned this last week when we talked about Airtel, sometimes you have to look at the profile of the directors that come particular boards, because for us, following on the back of the failure of the sale of the CEC to CDC, we actually felt that the board now looked at bringing capacity that would allow them to close out deals. And lo and behold, fast forward to recently, just yesterday, we broke the story on CEC selling the remaining 50% shares of their CEC liquid telecom shares. Now, obviously, this is a company that's now stockpiling cash, and it's interesting now that following the failure of that one, this is a huge win for their CEO at the moment. So now the question now that comes is, what is CEC now going to do with all this cash? It's because it's a lot of money. So they've got a number of options.
You're pretty positive that they've sold back the shares, because pretty much they're selling them back to Liquid Telecoms, right?
Not really. CEC built their fiber network, and when they used to own 100%, but then Liquid Telecom came in and bought 50% shares. Now, usually when companies make decisions like that, it means that they're probably want to raise additional. Liquid Telecom came in as equity partners, so they own 50%. So they come on board with a big checkbook, and they buy shares in the company, and then the company can then now invest that money either in building capacity, expanding their network,
laying down fiber optics.
Exactly.
Was a side project of theirs.
Well, you see, the interesting thing about electricity companies is that they obviously have to have a robust network, because they're spread across, and fiber is obviously the best way to actually deploy it. Most of these companies would deploy fiber over electricity lines, and there actually are fiber electricity lines that actually come with a core fiber right in the middle. So it makes it much easier for them to deploy, because they require it for things like their SCADA systems that monitor the activities on the electric grid. But then it creates excess and reserve capacity. So on the excess capacity, only maybe a small percentage of that fiber link is actually being used for internal communication. Now, the reserve capacity is that it's actually being used for data communication for internally, but then that could also be used now to provide internet service provision, and which is what us at Financial Insight believe that for companies, especially when they're going through tough times, they might need to consider some of their reserve capacity and venture into other businesses. We've seen it with low cost airlines all over the world, where one way they're, you know, carrying low-cost passengers. The other way they're actually, you know, carrying cargo, yeah, you know. Yeah, so yeah. It's in a similar way. That's how we you know, we view companies in the electricity industry
as
well.
And that is one thing. But now CEC Liquid, so now Liquid Telecom comes and they form CEC Liquid Telecoms and they're in it 50-50.
Exactly.
So did you think from the very beginning CEC were thinking, you know what, at some point we're going to leave this for you guys?
You know what, curiously enough, I actually didn't believe that. Actually believe that it's got something to do with the recent activities. And, you know, from the CDC interests, that falling through, and then following up now with the... I believe that this company now is now trying to look at focusing on its core business.
Okay.
With the tough times that, you know, most companies are actually going through right now, a lot of them would choose a strategy that allows them to just align all their businesses around their core business. Mm-hmm. So meaning that for them, they view themselves, it means that they've answered the question, what business are we in? They are in the energy industry. So that means that anything to do with telecom is basically a distraction. So they would want, you know, that to be managed. So chances are that they would offload that. So remember, what would happen in a situation like this is chances are that, you know, the staff that they were maintaining would have to be relieved and they'll go to the other company and they'll basically subscribe to that service. Kind of like the way we explained how Airtel sold its mass in last week's show, where, you know, they want to focus on their core business, which is telecommunications, as opposed to owning communications towers where they now have to do repair and maintenance of those sorts, which, you know, which increases their overheads.
I get that, but goodness me, Liquid Telecoms is doing so well across Africa. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yes, they are. And you can imagine with the increase in, you know, from 50 to 100% by Liquid Telecom, it means that, you know, this is going to become a formidable player. So that serves as a warning. It's a signal to the market that, you know, all the players that are in there better brace themselves. Because usually they'll come in and recapitalize and, you know, invest in their network. And they'll want to be competitive because they obviously want to get a good return on investment. And at the confidence that they've had, I mean, credit to CEC for actually being able to bring these guys on the table. And that you have to thank the management, or rather the board that is actually there. And that's why when we saw the signal of these guys, two guys coming in, I guarantee you, chances are they must have been whispering to the right people in order for this deal to go through.
So at this point, you have no indication of what they want to do next. But do you think they're going to acquire something new? Maybe acquire some more assets, because you're right, there's going to be a bunch of money at their door.
Yes, exactly. So they've got a ton of money. And you know,
how do these deals work? Is the money in the account right now?
Well, you know, chances are that you know that they'll work out something. But you know, I'd have to talk to the transaction advisor to think. But you know, looking at what CEC has actually been doing, because you have to remember that you know they get electricity from ZESCO. So meaning that you know, when if you look back at some of the things that they've been doing, just recently, a lot of people didn't know this, but they actually launched a 1 megawatt plant in Muflira of solar. And there was a statement that came from their CEO, Mr. Owen Slavwe, who had mentioned that they were actually now pursuing a renewables strategy.
Ah.
So we would not be surprised if they then now start investing part of that money in new solar sites all over the country.
That would be interesting.
It'll be very, very interesting.
So like, what does this mean for people? What is, has this affected their stock on the exchange, by the way?
Right. Now, in terms of things, and I'm just bringing up the Luce stock page right now.
Okay.
Now, yes, there was some movement prior. Now, what's obviously quite interesting was that there was movement in either way for the two CEC listed companies. You see, there's CEC, Copperbelt Energy, and there's the CEC Africa, which is Copperbelt Energy Corporation Africa.
Okay.
Yeah. So, so there was a 0.01% increase for CEC Zambia, and then a drop of 0.01. We still haven't done an analysis on why the CEC Africa stock actually moved down. But then we would not be surprised if the reason for that is that maybe some people might be dumping the CEC Africa stock and opting for, you know, the CEC Zambia stock, especially with him. Because remember, with our stock market, and thanks and credit to Securities and Exchange, they want to make sure that there's information symmetry. So both sides of the investment equation are privy to all the information.
Yeah, okay.
So if they know that, look, you know, CEC Zambia is offloading certain assets, focusing on the core business, this makes it a very good case for investing in that particular company.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Excellent. That was very good. Okay, let's go another break. And you've got one more company for us, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Let's go another break. We'll be back in 1 minute and Will will give us his last company recap for the week. Stay tuned.
For business on the go, visit www.moneyfmzambia.com. to watch, stream, and download various programs from anywhere in the world.
Money 93.7 FM, your business radio.
We have Mwelo Chibesakunda from Financial Insights with us outside in at Money. This is the program where we look at what's happening on the locally listed companies, and he gives us insights, very good insights, I must say, on the local listed companies. I've never heard these narratives before. You're doing something special, and I keep telling people, if you haven't checked out Financial Insights, FIZambia.com yet, please make sure you do. I've already bookmarked it. Like I said, I was comparing your story to one, which for me, like, it broke for me today. Then I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't see some Financial Insights. Then I go, then I'm like, oh, this actually dropped yesterday. You know, so
yeah, we try to be as
current
ahead
of the curve. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
definitely, and it helped that, you know, that our friends had a bit of downtime. So
oh, no.
That, yeah, but then I've stopped throwing shade at my friends.
They're going to come back for you.
No, they will. But you know, we'll be ready with them, armed with the financial statements
I
and all.
It.
Yeah,
don't worry, I will write all the stories of the financial journalism trade war in Zambia.
Absolutely.
I would write the whole thing.
Absolutely.
So what do we have? You got one more company for
us. Yes,
we've
got one more company, but this one's a bit more on the soft side. Our personal friend, Mr. Charles Carey. Wow, awesome guy this guy is. Outgoing managing director of Covenant Bank PLC. That's listed on the Lusaka Stock Exchange. Sadly, we did not pick up any news, information about his exit earlier on in the year in June.
Okay.
So it was important that we actually wrote the story about Covenant, because you know, Financial Insight loves to prop up the Zambian banks, because they love to take on the big boys. But now, why Charles Carey is very special to us? We have relationships with several of the listed companies' CEOs, and it always gives us a seat at the table to find out how these guys are thinking and how they run their companies. That way, it feeds into how we actually write the stories around them. Not that they influence, but then it allows us to decode the numbers in such a way that it gives us insight into how exactly the management team was actually thinking. Now, Charles Carey's contract, five-year contract, basically came to an end on the 30th of June. And, due to personal family commitments, the board and Charles mutually agreed to go on separation. Charles has enjoyed an illustrious career. The story that we covered on the site on him basically, gives you insight in terms of, his work experience. I mean, he's an alumni of Citibank. He's worked in Kenya, Uganda, Malawi, basically doing transactional work with the bank. Uh-huh. He's also been a part of the Pan African Investment Banking Group, and he's got operations in credit marketing, marketing experience. Basically, this is a heavyweight in the banking industry. So there was no way Financial Insight would sit back and not write about him. And prior to his appointment at Covenant, Charles's position was heading up corporate banking for Barclays Africa. So he's also an alumni of Barclays Bank, and a lot of guys in the banking circles that are legacy have actually had good working relationships with him. But what was very, very curious about us was that of Charles was that we also looked at his performance whilst he was in the bank. And the best place to actually look at the performance of a bank is actually to go to the financial statements.
Okay.
And there's a little paragraph in there where we looked at his first year, and in terms of his performance, his first year saw an increase in customers from 58,000 to 63,000accounts, and loans and advances grew from 250 million to 295 million.
Mm.
So Charles actually managed to grow revenues faster than costs, with monthly losses trending below downwards significantly compared to the same time in the previous year. So you could actually tell from his debut year, his first year, he was actually a high performer.
Yeah.
So then the article then now goes over and discusses his later years, and 2016 was actually a very, very interesting one. He did actually increase the loans and advances, but And this was our inaugural story about Covermont. We'd actually reported that he actually experienced a drop in, you know, customer deposits. That got us into trouble when he read the story. And that, really? you know, as fate would have it, that was how, you know, our friendship started. So, you know, he called us over, Roman and I, and, you know, we sat in his office and, you know, basically explained to us, now look, yes, the annual report did report that there was a drop in the customer numbers because year on year he'd been increasing them. But for this particular year, I'd actually told my boys to start cleaning up the accounts. And if you remember, if you rewind the clock, there was a lot of things that were happening around that time, and one of them is the KYC project with the Bank of Zambia. So they obviously had to go through this cleanup process that drastically reduced the bank accounts, you know, the number of accounts from 63,000 to 54,000. But, you know, overall, you know, you know, he's you know, after that cleanup, they've actually been experiencing very good performance. However, on the dividend side, and you know, this is where now we were a bit curious, because you know, dividends not so much, and it looked like you know, even with the time we sat down with Charles, we asked him the question, okay, what do you think about technology? Though he seemed a bit coy about technology, he said that, you know, that was one of the ways in which banks could actually reduce on costs. So for us, he told us that this was a cost conscious person, and when we asked him the question as well, the additional question of whether he would invest in technology, he said he would. And you know, when we now profiled him, we actually discovered that he was a Maris type manager. And by Maris type, this is basically game theory that describes someone who, you know, who is more into investing in R&D. And, you know, basically not wanting to eat the pie now, but eating the pie much, much later on. Yeah. So we believe that, you know, under Charles's leadership, that obviously turned around a lot of things at the bank. And, you know, he actually had them, you know, on a particular trajectory that was obviously improving. So, you know, it's, for us, it's sad to see him leave.
Excellent. I had a friend who worked at Cavmont, who was actually in senior management, and I'm pretty sure this is the same CEO who has a degree in theology.
Yes. Yeah, he actually has his academic background. Yeah. He's got a BA in politics, economics, and social history from the University of East Anglia, and a diploma in theology from Oak Hill Theological College in the UK.
What a pivot to CEO of a couple of banks, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always nice to have like this perfect balance. And I think it actually feeds into their, you know, the thought process of the CEO who's leading the company when he's got this diverse approach, because you know, leading a company, you're dealing with everything.
Any rumors, any whispers as to who will be the replacement?
Well, our story actually covers that, and we'd like you to, you know, visit it. But for now, we'll just mention that there's a Mr. Walt that is now interim CEO at Covermont. But I'm sure the board will be announcing once they've, you know, made an appointment. It's just that I was so shocked that, you know, Financial Insight actually missed that one. And, you know, I need to, you know, beat my analysts. I'm not too sure. But anyway, it happens. Yeah, we also have an off day once in a while. well, an off minute.
An off minute, right? Yes, that was an off minute.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, I don't think we need to go for another break then. What I will ask you, though, is that you promised me a follow-up on what we spoke about last time. If you remember, I was quizzing you on the so-called Big Three.
Yes.
And I did notice that I didn't read it. I just noticed that you had something Big Three on the blog. So I'm like, wait a minute. Is he cheating? I mean, is he going and following through with my story without talking to me first?
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes. So, you know, so after we had that conversation, I was like, okay, you know what? We obviously need to write something. Mm. But then once we did our research, it was pointless to go on this story and you know, discuss the, you know, the recent downgrade. So what we chose was an approach that actually looked at the Big Three. So essentially, in the financial world of ratings agencies, you have the Big Three credit rating agencies, and these are Standard and Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. So Fitch was the recent one that obviously downgraded us. And that was the question that you actually gave. So when we now went in and, you know, looked at the ratings, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of information online that will actually show you how these ratings companies would actually rate a country or a company.
Okay.
We actually discovered that out of the three, the very first rating that actually came on Zambia, which was from Moody's, was actually the worst one.
Really?
Because Moody's was the first to downgrade Zambia as a long-term issue rating in July of 2018. upgrading to CAA1, which means that it's not prime with substantial risks from a B3 rating. And after that, in August of the same year, S&P downgraded Zambia's sovereign credit rating to from B, which is highly speculative B grade, to B minus. And they cited fast debt accumulation and fiscal deficits. And then finally October, which was obviously very which is this month, we had Fitch, joining the fray. But then if you compare S&P's and Fitch's rating, they're all at the same level, which is a notch higher than what Moody's actually thinks. So out of the three, it's like Zambia sat for a test, and two out of the three teachers actually graded slightly favorably. But overall, obviously the debt and the fiscal
does
concerns.
Does Moody's have a trend of being the stricter one of the three?
Well, like the article actually explains that it's important to note that each rating agency has a particular framework framework that they actually use. Yeah. And from what we observed, and this is why we were a bit we're a bit shocked that Fitch actually took this long to actually come up with that rating, and it had nothing to do with the recent budget announcement. Because all the reasons that they gave were all related to thing, and another article that we made that we actually published was that sentiment is always very, very important, and it's always important that for people to look at the stories holistically and not just cherry pick, because then now you discover that the discovery that we made that the last rating was actually much better than the very first one. Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. So meaning that in this particular case, Moody's obviously has a particular framework that allows them to assess much quicker, and these guys, the other guys maybe had to wait for other parameters come in place. It could be IMF or World Bank sentiment that they'll obviously have to consider in their framework, and then boom, they'll then now give a country rating.
Are they all based in America, or are they spread?
Well, they're pretty spread. S&P and Moody's are based in the UK, and while Fitch is has a dual headquarters in New York City and London. So so they're pretty much in those territories.
And have we seen any new ramifications based on those ratings they've given, more especially the one in October? Was Zambia mentioned at the recent IMF summit? I didn't even look that.
Well, I haven't followed the recent IMF summit, but I mean, for us, for us at Financial Insight, we'll basically just say all three now are parity. So exactly. So after this, now it's just to see what happens in Q4 to see from the next cycle of ratings for the country.
Okay. All right. So, do you want to go another break? I have questions for you after the break. This will be your final segment. So, go and take your sip of water, then I'm going to grill you.
Absolutely.
All right. Absolutely. So, this is Outside In at Money, brought to you by Financial Insight Zambia, which is brought to you by Muelo Chivas Secunda.
I'm hoping I can have one of my other guys come in next week. But you and I,
we have the chemistry. Don't break the band up.
No, we're not going to break it.
Although I am interested. There's I think it was a lady who wrote an article recently on what I could be mistaken, but it was one of the more recent ones on policy ups and downs. Who wrote that one?
Policy ups and downs.
Yeah, it's on the 13th.
Oh, yeah. So that's a Katandula. Katandula, he's actually a guy.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He's a guy. He's one of my shy guys, but he's a very good analyst.
That
is a very, very good story, actually.
Yes,
talented writers, from Musa to Sophie, Katandula, Alan.
The reason why ladies are coming to my mind is that on your social media, the picture is you surrounded by two lovely ladies, and I'm like, what sort of company is this?
we're analysts in suits, and we love to look good.
Yes, you did look good. So that's Financial Insight Zambia, guys. I cannot say this enough. If you haven't been to the blog, you have to check it out. It's excellent, really. I must say it's excellent. But anyway, if you want to talk to us here today, he's in studio today. You can talk to him. The number is 0211-252-227 if you want to call. If you want to send a message, that's 0967-144-220. 0967-144-220. We're going to be back after this short break.